Everybody, welcome back to Castle Comms episode 113. Today we got a good one. Today we got the man behind the wiggle. We got the goat himself. Goat, how you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic. It's Easter weekend, so you know, just all the normal American stuff.
All right, all the American stuff. Chasing multicolored eggs in a yard with your children. It's actually a pretty awesome holiday from that end. Although I used to be in a very religious family where we'd do the whole, like, go to church on any excuse, which wasn't so fun growing up. And I'm kind of happy I'm no longer part of that sect. Do you do anything fun for Easter? Do you do, like, the big ham bake? Do you do the big Easter egg hunt? Like, what is the goat Easter routine?
So with us, it's just small family stuff. Nothing too crazy outside of the ordinary. This year we decided we're not going to make any food. We're just going to go get some. There's this donut shop that does kolaches and stuff like that. So we're going to break the mold a little bit and do that and do a low effort Easter. So nothing too interesting, you know?
Right. It's, you know, everyone has their donut shop, their local one. And I love mine because every day I go to it before I go to work, there's always this group of old people who are just like devout flat earthers and they debate anyone who will sit down with them. So before I go to work, I have my weekly flat earth debate. So at your donut shop, do you have any like crazy old people sex like that roaming around or is it pretty standard?
This is a crazy busy one where most people are doing drive-thrus. So it's not even, I don't even think I've even interacted with anybody there.
That's probably so, for the best.
Man, I don't want to dox myself, but I would tell you more, but I don't want to dox myself.
No, absolutely not. If I were you, I wouldn't want to dox myself either. So jumping straight into it, I watched a lot of your content. And I really liked a lot of it. And one of the things that really interested me the most is you said before you were a firefighter, you did a lot of philosophy type videos. Now, were these videos based off of personal philosophy, learning from the masters like Plato or Aristotle, Kant, people like that? Or what were those videos? What did they entail?
So I guess you could say I have a history of having somewhat controversial opinions. So I tend to take positions that I think are true, but not things that people that are convenient to accept. So I'll give you an example. This has nothing to do with my views, but if you poll people and you ask them a question, you know, something like political, like, is it okay to get an abortion or something? Or would you get an abortion if you had an unplanned pregnancy? You know, a small percentage of people would say they would. So it's something like 1 out of 3, 1 out of 6, you know, depending on where you're at. But when you actually look at the data, 90% of people would actually get the abortion.
It's really easy to say you would do something in that situation, but it's another thing entirely to be there and to be in it. And
so what I'll say is that, you know, I don't have a strong opinion about abortion, but it is a great example of something that's very polarizing. People outwardly communicate a different view than what they would actually do in their life. And so essentially, you know, I found a few really interesting ideas that when you actually extrapolate them, it's really fascinating because, you know, it has a lot of, you know, there are a lot of consequences. So one idea is nonviolence. So I think the initiation of force is not right. And I think most people would agree with that. And so if you talk to somebody and you say, I want to resolve a dispute and you say, well, I'm just going to go punch the guy. It's like, whoa, what are we doing? Hang on here. You know, if they haven't stolen something from you. Yeah.
From that first responder background, because I'm sure you dealt with that all the time. Like, you know, like I know cops more than firefighters, but you got to deal with medical situations where people are not all mentally sound and they just try to do crazy shit. And you're like, you can't do that, sir. Please.
Oh, sure. Yeah. And there's even consent when it comes to, you know, medical care. Right. So, you know, you have to figure out if they even can consent to what you're getting, you're treating them. But long story short, you know, like some other ideas, you know, when it comes to religion and God and all that, I'm, you know, a rational skeptic, I guess you could say. And, you know, so I, you know, back in like probably 2006, 2007, this is when YouTube was not owned by Google. It was its own. It was actually a dating website initially. It was a video dating website, and then it converted over and it just became like a really great place to store media because, you know, like back then, like putting video online was very expensive and very difficult. And so this was back when YouTube had replies where you could reply to someone's video and it would show up in like the recommended right below the video. And so YouTube was much more of like a social media website back then. And so I got into debates with people and put out content, you know, around, you know, just basically being a free thinking skeptic. And, you know, I didn't get too crazy into it, but, you know, I had quite a following and I had, you know, produced, you know, I was actually making money doing it, which was pretty unique. This was, I was one of the first people to beta test the YouTube AdSense program. And so, really, really, really cool. And
that is
my biggest video was, had nothing to do with any of that. It was a video about, I was watching like the news or something on TV back when TV was a thing. And there was this like highlight where they were talking about the Miss Teen USA award assembly or something. And the girl who was like accepting the award had this big gaffe where she accepted the award and she was doing a thank you speech. And she just completely fumbled it. I mean, it was kind of hilarious. And so I thought, man, if you put that right next to the ending of this movie, and the name of it is escaping me right now, but I basically spliced those two clips together and it was really funny. And this is before memes, this is before all that. And it started getting millions of views. And, and then I had my AdSense turned on. I was like, whoa. And this is back before copyright strikes or any of that kind of stuff. It was like the Wild West. I was like, wow, you can actually make money doing this. So that's kind of how things got kicked off for me. But yeah.
Right. That's actually crazy. So when you would take these like stances just to have like, you know, conversations, playing devil's advocate, so to speak, would you take like hard stances like the Nietzsche God is dead stuff? Or would you take more of like an agnostic, be like, well, what about like something fucked up like childhood cancer? Why would a God let that, or like that kind of stuff? Like what kind of approach would you say?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, so I was raised religious. I was raised Christian. You know, I'm from Texas, so you can imagine how that goes.
I was stationed there for a year, and it's very
Well, it just depends. So I was born in Austin, so you know Austin. A lot of people compare Austin to California or Portland or something like that. So it's a more liberal area, but yeah. Yes. So I was raised religious, and I had, you know, falling out, and I would classify myself as, you know, a staunch atheist. Okay, so but I, you know, in my videos, I think one thing that I was known for is being a very reasonable, like, empathetic person. So I wasn't super like militant about it or anything like that. I went through it was a really difficult time dropping religion from my life. And I think my videos were focused around, hey, if you have no one to talk to about this, if you've never thought about this, here are some videos that are really well thought out that are super reasonable. And I had really good relationships. There was one guy that I would always do video responses to, and he would do responses to me. I actually met him in real life. He was a youth pastor. And I also met up with another guy who he was a, you know, what they call an apologist, which is like somebody in like a Christian church who, you know, responds to criticism and, you know, claims of, you know, logic conundrums and things like that. They classify themselves as like an apologist. So I had good relationships with them, and you know, it was a pretty mild channel compared to what goes on today. But yeah, yeah.
So would you say you feel pretty comfortable being in a confrontational sort of conversation and or debate? Would you say you're comfortable in those spaces?
Yeah, I would say that's home for me. You know, most people, that's not the case, but yeah.
Right. So when did you notice this about yourself? Was this something you learned about yourself growing up? Was this something you learned in the Fire Academy, or just like, you know, as an adult, like, did you always love to be like kind of in those conversations in that mix?
I think most people around age, you know, post puberty to age 25, I would say that age is where you are most likely to change and find yourself and figure out who you are. I think most people go down that path. There are exceptions, obviously. And that's where all the great music comes from, is that time period as well. All the artists you can think of. But I think there are some big things that happened in my life. I think my father dying early in my life. So most people have some figure in their life that kind of guides them and whatnot. So I think you have to kind of find your own way. I think going into the medical industry and kind of seeing death is a real thing, watching a lot of people die at a young age and seeing, you know, just kind of the misery and the humanity of things in a way that's, you know, very visceral, I think changes you as a human being. And you know, I also think, you know, having, you know, if you have a family environment that's not great, and you can look at that and kind of, you know, get outside of it, you know, whether it be, say you drop religion, or you drop, maybe you have a parent who's an alcoholic, or maybe you have, you know, a family that, you know, think school is everything and you're an artist, right. You know, you
just some major cornerstone that you leave. Yeah.
I think when you look and you see how, and you watch a bunch of old adults, you know, that are in their 50s, 60s, 70s who are all in on something that, you know, maybe isn't correct. And right. It could be your parents or whatever. I think that breeds skepticism in someone. And right. You know, a lot of my beliefs are, I know they're quote crazy, or I know that they're not mainstream, and I've never met somebody who agrees with me on everything, you know? And so, right. You know, when you work in the fire department, so I started really young. I got my EMT and I worked as a volunteer before I went to a fire academy. And then I worked professionally for a little over 10 years. And I think in that environment, you know, it's a very conservative environment, right?
Yes.
And so
it very well is.
Nobody at work agreed with me. In fact, I met with a neighbor yesterday. They're building a pool. We're building a pool and we're using I wanted to come check out his setup. And, you know, he told me, he sent me a text afterwards and said, man, it's great to run into a, progressive, you know, another progressive and somebody blah, 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 blah in the neighborhood. And, you know, I'm apolitical. Okay. So like, I believe it a lot. I believe in a lot of things that liberals believe in. I believe a lot of things that conservatives believe in. But I'm very apolitical. And it's just so funny because I run into a liberal and he thinks I want to, you know,
tribal now. It's like, oh, you're a Democrat, I'm a Democrat, we could be friends, or the other way around with the fucking elephant. And it's just like, you shouldn't vote based off of party. You should vote based off of what you think is the best for the country. You know, like, I know so many people who make their candidate, they're like, but that's my guy. I'd be like, but why? Like, you don't like him.
Yeah, sure. And so I think I try not to, you know, in social situations at work, you know, I try not to find things to disagree on, and I try to find places where we agree, and maybe if I can sneak one little idea into someone's brain, that's great. If I can just get them to kind of think about something a little more broadly, that's fine. In my public persona, it's kind of the opposite, where, you know, if I think something is important, like I'm working on a documentary right now. If I think something is important, I want people to see it and I want to change their mind. In my personal life, I most people I talk to have no idea. They would never believe, you know, some of my positions, you know? And it's not that I don't believe in being a reptile or like trying to be a chameleon. I don't believe in like being dishonest with people, because I think that is like a barrier to intimacy. It makes you very distant, you know?
But and it's very disrespectful,
you know,
too.
Just lying. I think as you get to know people better, and you have a more serious relationship with people, I think it is appropriate to slowly give them ideas, you know, that or let them know, hey, you know, this is who I am, you know, and then usually they find, oh my God, it's not that big of a deal, you know.
Totally. So being somebody in the medical field, like I was a Navy corpsman, which is like a military medicine guy, combat and non-combat related for 8 years. And now I do occupational safety and health, and I work nursing and stuff. So people who are in those types of fields, who see the realities of things like death, like terrible disease, terrible injury, things like that on a regular basis, it's hard not to get a certain callous, you know, it's hard not to have a certain like jaded sense of things. Now, when you like went through all this, did you find it hard to relate to people who don't have that experience? Do you ever find like it's kind of a hard disconnect?
Sure. I mean, probably like you will find that people in the medical field, especially in emergency services or like the ER, they have a really crude sense of humor. I mean,
yes.
The jokes that I could tell right now that would get me canceled, you know, is long.
The joke that killed Castle Comms.
Yeah, I mean, it's because I think people just don't understand it. They don't understand how people cope and all that. And I do think there is a sense of kind of you know, brotherhood, I guess you could say, or you know, there is a, like, you know, you've been in the trenches, you know, and there is a level of respect and an understanding there. And I do think, you know, I'll give you an example. You know, I meet with someone in my neighborhood who works a tech job, who you know, has never gotten their hands dirty and whatnot. There is a level of disconnect there. Although on the other hand, you know, I look at my children and I think, I hope they don't get their hands dirty. I don't necessarily, you know, when someone approaches me and says, hey, I want to be a paramedic, or I want to be a firefighter or something, I, you know, I ask all the typical questions, why and all that. And part of that is screening them for like their personality type. Like, can you handle this? Like, is this something that you want to go down? And I do think that, I guess what I'll say is, I don't think less of people, but I do think there is, it is harder to connect with people. You have to try a little harder. I do find that, most of my friends, and when I look back on things, have all had experiences like that. I can think of one of my really good friends that I still play Tarkov with. You know, he's ex-military. He had, a spinal tumor, you know, that got him medically discharged, and, you know, had a, you know, a rough go at,
yeah,
at things. And I think there's a level of understanding, you know, there.
Absolutely. So would you say at that time of your life, video games were kind of like a de-stressor, something like that, like a decompressing aspect, or were they something completely different for you?
I think a little bit of both. You know, I've played them my whole life. I was born in the late 80s, and I was like the first kid on my street that had like a high speed connection. We had like the DSL phone line, you know, business connection, you know, so we could get on the internet. And I was playing World War II Online, which was, you know,
that was such a great game. And you're the only person I've ever come across who has played that fucking game.
Yeah, it's still, even today, the metrics are, now if you look at it, I mean, the graphics are super outdated, but the idea of having, you know, Europe scaled down to a quarter and it's one server with everyone playing all at one time is really cool. And you know, so I played a bunch of MMOs, you know, everything you can imagine at that time period. And so I think, to me, de-stressor, yes, but I also think a challenge. Most people, I you know, video games get a bad rep in it, and there are a lot of downsides to, you know, if you do get addicted to video games and you start prioritizing over life, but they challenge you. And if you play games, you know, I play games in a very different way than most people, like Tarkov, for example. If you have kind of a Tarkov audience, you know, I sometimes, when a patch happens, I like to just not look at the notes, and I don't look at the Wikipedia, and I just run in and die like seven times trying something. And most people just wouldn't do that. Right. And I think just treating it like a challenge, a good mental puzzle. And video games are great. I'm going to be a gamer for life. My kids are, I got, three kids, but two of them are 11. They have little gaming PCs in the room over there, and we play, you know, Pal World or whatever the hell is going on at the time, you know?
Totally. So with making content, I know you touched on this a little bit in one of your videos of why you're leaving gaming when it comes to content creation, but how would you say making content and being in the content world has affected your relationship with gaming? And is it something that, looking in retrospect, you would do again?
Yeah. So, you know, when there are so many people out there that are trying streaming and trying content creation, and I think what they end up doing is they watch the big streamer that they love, and they think, well, I'll just stream like they will, and I'll get viewers, and I'll make money over time, and I'll be entertaining or whatever. And what I think they don't realize is for every, you know, back when I was making a lot more shorts and streaming Tarkov and doing things like that, for every hour or two I would spend streaming, there was at least 2 or 3 hours on the back end, planning things out, editing, making connections, all right. that kind of stuff. And I think the ultimate thing that it comes down to is for the vast majority of people who are going to make it, you know, making content and playing games, you know, for a living, it is going to eventually feel like a job. And, you know, you're going to have sponsorship requirements. You're going to have to play a game. You're going to have to play a game. And then this is one of the issues with Tarkov is you have people who have to play Tarkov.
Yes.
I've talked to a lot of
people who, you know, off the record, they say they feel trapped. And that's terrible. And it's like, you know, once you establish something, it's hard to move away from that, especially if that's like a set paycheck. Like, imagine if you had a job and, you know, I make X amount of money every paycheck. But if I try to step out of that, it's like an unknown amount. Like, how am I going to pay rent? How am I going to pay my bills kind of thing? It's
because you know, I believe in free markets and free economies and things like that. And even without a government, even without a boss, you are essentially a slave to your audience. And you don't have to be. So this is kind of a voluntary situation. You can change games and try to do something else. And people have, but you need to know that, like, you know, there's going to be some pain there. You know, you may go from 100 viewers to 5 viewers or whatever. And I think most people don't realize, you know, the path it takes to get to success. And they do look at really rare use cases, really rare cases where people have a lot of viewers just playing the game. And then, you know, eventually they're able to hire editors and hire thumbnail people and they're able to automate most of the stuff on the back end. But it takes, you know, a long time and it is a lot of work. And I think the issue for me is I enjoy the path that I get here. I try not to live in regret. I try not to look back and, you know, say, oh, I should have done this or that. And the truth is, who knows what would have happened and I wouldn't be who I am. But
hindsight, you know, 2020. I
made the decision to not do gaming. Number one is it's very difficult to be a free agent and do what you want to do. And secondly, I found myself, I think I'm more useful doing other things. And I think with content creation and all that, I'm being pulled in so many different directions. And I think to really do it in gaming, I think streaming should be a big part of it. I think you need to be playing lots of games and you need to be all in on it. And if you're not all in on it, it will show. Like, audiences will pick up on things so quickly. A lot of people ask me, well, why don't you make a video about Counter-Strike? Why don't you make a video about Valorant? I want you to do this. And it's like, I don't think you realize, like, I have almost 10,000 hours playing Tarkov. Like, why? I have a really strong opinion on things, and I can very confidently weigh in on things.
And then moving to another game that has such a devout viewership and like playership, like a CSGO, like imagine having like 20 hours in there and then trying to tell someone who's got like X amount of crazy hours, like, what the game is like, what's wrong with the game and what's in the game. Like, it's going to be hard not having all that background. Whereas at Tarkov, you have 10K hours. You know that game inside and out.
Yeah. And I also think I've played it since like pre-alpha, you know? So it's one of these things where I've watched this thing develop over a long period of time. I have a relationship with it, you know, if that makes sense, you know?
No, totally. And,
I think a lot of people, what they end up doing as a gamer is they try to basically recreate their first love. So they have this experience with Tarkov or they have this experience with WoW or whatever it is, and they hop around trying to fill that high, trying to find the next one that they're going to get that fix from. And you'll see this right now. A bunch of people are you know, checking out this new pre-alpha game. Yeah, there's Gray Zone, and there was another one, and everyone's, you know,
X-Fil.
Like a bunch of content creators are getting in with the devs and trying to create these relationships and do all this kind of stuff, and they're doing the same thing. And I find that, you know, I don't want to do that. No, number one, I don't want to be bought or beholden to a game developer. And I think that's a big problem with Tarkov right now is you have, you know, a lot of people who are financially incentivized to support the devs. And in multiple ways. Everything from, you know, if they're on the shit list, well, they don't get Twitch drops. Twitch drops are like a huge bonus for content creators. And just like, who knows how much money and exposure you get by being on the Twitch drops list. You get thousands of more viewers, you know, for usually a week at a time. You get, you know, all this bonus money and ad revenue. And, you know, there's streamer items, and there's, you know, there's events and all kinds of stuff. And, you know, I don't like playing those games. I like being a free agent. And I think if you're a gamer, it's tough because it's really hard to have viewers, you know, and stream if you're hopping around and you're more of a critical kind of guy. So I think making videos is more my thing. So
jumping a little ahead. So when you were talking about people feeling trapped in a game, do you think that was one of the reasons why people kind of came at you the way they did when you made the Wiggle video? Do you think some people kind of felt like you were coming after their livelihood? Do you think that may be a reason why people kind of took the approach they did?
Sure. I wouldn't say only exclusively, but I would say, you know, the vast majority of people who've been the most critical happen to be people who, when you look at their last 100 videos and their last 100 streams, it's Tarkov, you know?
Right.
And, so, you know, there is this, you know, I think Tarkov is in potentially could be in its late stage, demise right now. It's looking like Arena is not, the big win that we all thought it might be. They didn't implement, you know, server changes that they can use in the main game that are going to, you know, prevent cheating and things like that. They just didn't spend the money to reprogram it. That was one of the things I was kind of holding out for. And, you know, and they didn't do that. And, you know, the main game is plugging along, but I mean, it's like how many more content additions before this thing is done, but before it kind of fizzles out. And so I think everyone's kind of feeling it. This was a great wipe, but at the same time, you know, what's the long-term outlook here? And so I think a lot of people feel that, and they see someone like me as just a threat, like this existential threat. And it's when you look at the Wiggle video, I can pull it up here in a second. I got to switch over to my other account, but it's almost like it has like my upvote ratio on that video is extraordinary. It is not a controversial video from players who play the game, but when you go and you look at content creators, half of them don't like it. And I think that's really telling. You know, the guys who are making content for the game are getting disconnected from the, you know, the people who play it. So it has 164,000 upvotes to 2,800 downvotes. So that's,
it's a pretty, you know, good 90, ratio.
98% or something
pretty
like that.
Pretty damn good ratio.
For a video that's apparently really controversial, you know, I've made a lot of controversial videos that don't have this much of a, let's look at it. Let's see if it'll give me a percentage here. So 97.7% likes to dislikes. So my channel average is 97.4. So it actually did better than my channel average.
That's awesome.
So I mean, like, I think that's really, 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 really telling. And, you know, some of the guys that are the most critical, they went into it. I got to watch this live. So I watched some really big Tarkov creators live experience the video, and they, before they even watched it, they had made up their mind. Landmark being one example of that. He made up his mind. And as the video was unfolding, you could tell he was like dying inside because he didn't expect there to be like the evidence that I put in the video, which was the Wiggle. It wasn't right. Just like, oh, I got aimbotted, you know? And so, and he's like, well, how are you going to know? And then, and you know, at one point he's watching this video. He's like, you can't tell this guy's cheating, blah, blah, blah. And then the guy's like wiggling through the wall. And he's like, oh, okay.
So when all this happened, you made a video like where you ranked people's responses to your stuff. You had like XQC, Hassan, big people like that. So when people – and you also went over if they asked for permission, and then they actually transformed said content. Now, when these Tarkov creators made content based off your content reaction stuff, did any of them ask you for permission to do that?
I'm trying to think. Dr. Lupo messaged me. on Twitter and said, hey, great video. I was thinking about using some of the clips for a video response. Is it cool? And I said, yeah, man, totally. And I said yes to everybody, by the way. There's nobody I said no to. But I do think it's a great professional courtesy to ask. So he was one that I do remember. And of course, XQC's team reached out to me after he had done it live and asking if they could put it on YouTube, which is kind of like a middle ground, you know, right. Like, I don't know what to think about that.
Like, you already did it. So
you already did it. Now you're just seeing if you can get the ad revenue on YouTube. And I figured, you know, I want this to be seen by as many people. And I didn't copyright strike anybody. I didn't, you know, even though I could have probably made a bunch of money doing that.
Yeah.
But I wanted to get out there, and you know, I also like using clips here and there out of, you know, to provide context, and I despise it when I get DMCA'd. So, you know, got to be consistent there. But
right.
I don't think anyone else asked. And what's interesting is I'm not hard to contact. At the time, my Discord was open. I had my DMs open on Discord. I had to turn that off recently.
I mean, I was just able to contact you based a Twitter message.
Yeah, I have it completely open. And the reason I shouldn't say this to people, the reason I have it completely open is like, I don't want to not be able, like people to not be able to reach out to me with information.
Right.
But at the same time, it comes with a penalty where you just get absolutely spammed, both by bots right. and by real people too. And so you should see some of the walls of text I get.
Sure they're terrible. Like, I don't know what it is about the online space when it comes to, like, you know, talking heads of anything really. If you disagree with said talking head, the people who love said talking head and have some kind of weird parasocial relationship with said talking head feel like it's okay to come at you. And it's just like, I don't even know you. Like, you're not even talking about anything vital to the conversation. You didn't even read my response. You're just coming at me to come at me because you think I went after your friend kind of thing. Did you experience a lot of that?
You know, not initially. It's really interesting. Of course, I actually got the most negative stuff that I got initially was the cheating community. So they would come into the Discord and spam links and message everybody in the server and try to scam people. A lot of stuff happened to my computers and my stuff. I had to,
they bricked your computer.
We've since moved from that house. There's a lot of things. I don't want to, you know, it's kind of like if you get swatted, you're not supposed to talk about it because then it incurred, you know, it's kind of one of those kind of things. But there's a lot of bullshit that happened, and it was really, really, really annoying. And so I've since taken down my Discord because people ask me why. It's like, dude, it's been such a headache to deal with that. But when it comes to like Twitter and all that kind of stuff, there's a handful of people who are really, really critical, and you know, they won't actually interact with me or have a debate or anything like that. I was really open and transparent with people. I went on, you know, a handful of podcasts. Anybody who asked me to come on, I went on. I didn't reject anybody. And actually, to this day, I've never rejected a podcast invite. I try not to don't tell that to too many people because maybe I'll have to start turning them down. But so I went on and talked to everybody. I said, ask me any question you want. I think ultimately everyone knew the hacking was bad. And even of my critics, even some of my biggest critics, initially guys like Veritas and stuff who I, you know, had great conversations with offline and, you know, went on podcasts and stuff. They didn't even deny that my results were wrong.
Right.
It was kind of this like criticize the messenger and not the message. And they didn't like the way I did it, or maybe I should have done this way, or, you know.
Was it,
and
you think, because of your delivery, or do they think that it was like they thought you were like experiencing delusions of grandeur after said thing? Like, what was their excuse for just going at you? Like, if the content is correct and if you agree with it, just because you might not like the messenger, like, what argument is that? You know,
I think, you know, you'll see these like one-liners, these half-baked one-liners, you know, once a cheater, always a cheater. He installed cheats there, therefore he's a cheater. And, you know, you would see things like that, or people would say stuff like, you know, you didn't show all your evidence and all that. And I talked about this extensively on other podcasts. And one of the reasons I didn't is I could have made a mistake with one of the clips that I showed. It could have been desync or something like that. I don't think it, I personally am not 100% convinced that the guy wasn't cheating, but it was enough. There was enough logic and evidence behind this one guy who wrote in that was in the video that I said, you know what? Like, if I release all of this, what's going to happen is everyone's going to go after all these people. And people are going to say, well, you know, I don't think this guy was a cheater that you thought was a cheater. And there's really, it is not like a hard science. And I'm not an academic institution that has a bunch of researchers and people auditing my stuff.
What do you mean you're not Purdue University? Go.
Like, I know, right? And so the issue is like, no one even like what, like if I gave a spreadsheet, would that make everybody happy? Like, and then, and I just also, edit line number 10 and say, you know,
you're making digestible content for people to consume, like going over things line by line and like going over like every single raid is going to detract. And like you said earlier, you wanted the most eyes on this as possible. So making it enjoyable and digestible is a factor too in that process, I'm sure.
Yeah, I do think if the information was not true, I left all my raid IDs on the in the video. So I knew I was going to lose that account, you know, if not, never be able to play the game again. I knew that was a gamble and I was willing to take it because I was just at my wit's end. But I left the raid IDs in there. And I know that if I was running around killing people or if my data was like really skewed with like the number of raids I did and all this kind of stuff, BSG has access to all of that. They could have just smeared me. Like you would not believe, but they can't because I didn't lie at all in the video. And I knew I was going to be audited by at least BSG because there's an example of this guy came on Reddit and he goes on Reddit and he says, you know, I got accused of hacking by this streamer. You know, I went into this raid and he accused me of cheating and blah, blah, blah. And BSG like responded on Reddit and say, we looked into this guy's account and he's actually a cheater and we banned him and they like shut the thread down. And so I don't think they like, they're not hyper vigilant with every post on the internet that says, you know, this and that. But with this video, I can guarantee you they looked into it. They looked at my raid IDs. They were able to figure out what raids I was in. They banned my account. You know, it was my wife's EOD account that I was using.
Was she mad about that? Did she give you shit about that?
She actually was. And I was like, listen, we could buy another, well, we can't buy another EOD account now, but, she was, cause she actually plays. And, so she was not too happy. But long story short, you know, I think at some level, when you're working independently, people have to trust your overall message or trust what you're saying. And I think everyone's experience validated what I showed. And I think the big thing was is that it's not that there's a lot of blatant cheaters or that there's a lot of cheaters. I think the big thing to me that I wanted to get across is there are more than you think. And I had a bunch of friends come in and audit me. So I had in one of the clips, you can actually hear my buddy in the background. He doesn't stream or anything, but he plays with me and I said, come in Discord, just watch what I'm doing. And he just watched me for like 2 or 3 raids and he couldn't believe it. And I had my wife come in the first night I did it. I had my wife come in and sit down and I said, look, I cannot believe this. And we went into 5 raids in a row and there wasn't anybody with a high KD. It was all like 2, 3, 5 KDs. And we would just run over to random people and wiggle through walls and all this kind of stuff. And they'd wiggle back. And I'm like, I cannot believe this. And, at that point, that's when I called Luke, from Linus Tech Tips and was like, dude, should I run this? What do you think I should do? He recommended that I like save all the, VODs and all that, which I did. But at some level, I think it's irresponsible. Like I have a responsibility to not cause harm to people.
Right.
And while the ones where people are wiggling are for sure like 100%. And that's how I kind of did the metric. I counted those. There are a lot of cases where someone is like two walls over and I run up and I'm wiggling and then he throws a nade and runs away. And I'm like, he can't hear me, but maybe he heard something different. And I can't really point a finger at him and say that he's cheating and I also ran into a couple streamers, which the evidence was not 100%. It was like 95%. And I just, I did not feel comfortable getting into a, and at the time I was a smaller Tarkov creator, and I didn't feel comfortable releasing that. And, you know, it's difficult.
So yeah, that's a very interesting topic too. And we touched about people in like certain sects who may feel trapped in a certain setting. And it's very plausible that somebody who makes like crazy content, especially someone who plays at a crazy level, like if your entire audience is based around crazy gameplay at a crazy level, that's hard to maintain and your livelihood depends on it. I could totally see why somebody in that section may use a soft cheat or may cheat, because you know, when your livelihood depends on it and it's like, it's a taxing thing and you have to play at a high level, people have done things similar.
Yeah, I mean, people contact me all the time saying this streamer's cheating, this streamer's cheating, and I will run into a lot of streamers who are up, like the guys who cheat the most are the guys who have the 5 to 15 viewers that have been streaming for less than a year and are trying to make a name for themselves. That's the most common thing, and usually right. you can just do like a psyche eval on them and like look at like, okay, they're between this age, they're a male, they, you know, they have this kind of attitude or they have this kind of ego to them. Yes, this is already, we've like checked a lot of boxes, let's watch. And then you find things that are just undeniable, you know. But these bigger streamers, guys like, you know, Willers and Landmark, I get these messages all the time. You look at their gameplay and it's like, dude, they play so much. Yeah. The idea that they would they wouldn't have been caught by now, because you will get caught eventually. Like if you're using these things, you're going to make a mistake, you're going to get a wall wrong, you're going to pre-fire something and the guy's actually a one wall back,
right.
You're going to have like your cheat's going to glitch out.
Something's going to happen and the world will see it.
Yeah, and eventually, you know, eventually you're going to make some kind of mistake. Something that I saw a lot with these cheater guys is out in Shoreline, they would get like the hills wrong. So like you can, when you see somebody like through a hill and they're coming over the hill, sometimes there's a hill between the hill. And it's really confusing on maps like Shoreline and maps that have a lot of like hills like that. And I would peek my head up above and they would boop, 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 but they would hit the hill. And not my head. And I was like, oh, yeah, this guy's cheating.
There's just no way they could see you otherwise. You know, and, yeah, that's funny.
What's funny is because I ran this test and I'm seeing how you're catching them. I when I watch gameplay, it's not that I am like, you know, way better at it, but there are little things that I'll notice that I didn't notice before.
Right. No, totally. Like subtle movements. Like there's people in the CSGO community when they let people do Overwatch. Like a lot of them catch potential cheaters through just movement and like, you know, having knowledge they wouldn't have otherwise, kind of thing. So no, that makes sense. So question to you is, I saw in one of your videos you talked to some people who were actively cheating and they were just actively lying about their real lives, like claiming to be like a computer programmer when a guy works in construction and, you know, just making outrageous claims that are nowhere factual. Do you feel like the most people who are doing this are insecure? They're just doing this because they feel inadequate? They just are frustrated? Like, what would you say your take is based on what you experience?
Sure. So I thought about making an entire video about the psychology of cheaters. And what I found is, you know, success kind of screwed me over because a lot of my connections, I tried to maintain connections with a lot of different cheaters, not really to like farm engagement by talking to them, but also, but to, you know, get kind of eyes on things. Hey, have your friends been banned? What's going on? Cause they were pretty honest with me. And I, over a long period of time, collected a lot of information on them and I didn't publish it. And so I wanted to maintain these relationships and I've lost most of them because I think they just feel the pressure of the amount of eyeballs on the situation.
Right.
But I was recording interviews with several guys that I haven't published. And one, I talked to this guy and, you know, I asked him about his childhood. I have a little bit of a philosophy background and I do, and I have a degree in, you know, it is a sociology, you know, degree, or it is a public health degree, but it's primarily a sociology degree.
Well, so firefighter, you meet a lot of people and you see how people act.
Yeah. And just being a dad and just living life, you know, you learn things and I always ask him like, how was your childhood? And oh, it's perfectly normal. And I'm like, okay, that's interesting. And of course that, you know, it's never the case. No, you know, so you go and you talk to them and, he's a teenager still, like probably 18, 19, hasn't seen his mom in like 10 years. So his parents got divorced. His mom like basically took off and started another family, and he hasn't seen her in 10 years since he was like 8 or something. And I'm like, okay, so you classify this as a normal childhood. Okay.
That's heavy. You know,
I start talking to him, and like, you know, he doesn't think anything of it. But what I have noticed across the board, the guys who are addicted, okay, these aren't people rage hacking and then, you know, fuck this game, rage hacking and leaving. That's more just immaturity and, you know, whatever. The guys who are addicted, because it is truly an addiction. These guys cannot stop, and they will spend tons of money on it. They tend to have, they all tend to lack empathy. They, when you ask them why they cheat, they respond in a very logical way. That's like, well, why would I not? Like, it's a waste of time dying. When, I mean, they almost think your question is laughable. And a lot of them, they're living an alternate life, this made up world. Their actual life is not very great. They don't have a good outlook in life. They aren't making a lot of money. They aren't in meaningful relationships. You know, they aren't married. They have no plan of ever interacting with, you know, a woman, you know, romantically, right, or whatever they're into. They don't have a lot going for them. And so this cheating is a world where they have complete control and they become a god and they kill the guy, you know, they kill that, you know, their asshole boss, you know, in the game, right? Like the stereotype of this caricature that they don't like. And, you know, it's weird because there's kind of two types that you run into. You run into these people completely void of any kind of humanity. And then you
kind
run into
sociopathic.
Like,
people.
Exactly. And you can hear it in their voice. And the one thing that I can't really describe to you is like, I can listen to somebody VoIPing game and I'm like, oh man, this guy's just, I don't know what to say about it, but it just has a voice to it. And then there's also the asshole guy who's just kind of, he's kind of more of a narcissist, you know, psycho, where, you know, they're just all about themselves and they're almost like proud of it, you know?
Right.
And those two types I would say are the most common. And, you know, narcissists are about 1/6 of the population. 1 out of 6 people have narcissist tendencies. It's not always the worst thing in the world. They tend to, you know, be CEOs and make companies and invest in, you know, dedicate their life to a craft or whatever, you know? So it's not the worst thing ever, but you know, you definitely don't want them trying to be the best in a game if they're willing to just download cheats.
True. That is very true. So when you made all this, I mean, you suffered. You had your computers hacked and completely bricked. You had people in a community that you have been in since almost its inception say some pretty crazy shit about you because of however they took the video or the fact that you purchased cheats. So in the Tarkov community, do you feel like you were kind of used and abused?
You know, I still see myself as like an outsider. Because even before the Wiggle video, I was critical of, I called them, this was not the most, respectful, I'm not the most proud of this statement, but I would call a lot of people in the Tarkov BSG simps. And so,
I mean, of all things that are said online, that's pretty tame.
Yeah. And so, you know, I saw a lot of you know, the content creators just absolutely not being very honest and transparent with what was going on and how the news was handled and all this kind of stuff. And so I've always seen myself as more of an outsider, and I never really made a lot of like great connections with bigger creators in the game. Most of my other YouTube connections are outside of gaming and producing and stuff like that. But, and so to me, I think I knew I was hitting the nuclear button. And I think that's why I was able to do it, because I think most content creators, they just couldn't have made that video. And people criticize, well, I would have done this if I made it. I would have done this. Well, you know, those videos wouldn't have been made. BSG would have asked you to take it down and you would have taken it down. BSG would have copyright striked you. I was able to do it because I went nuclear with it. And I found a way of publicizing the video before it even came out in a way that they couldn't take it down.
You did an interview, didn't you? That's when it came out that you were dropping said video.
So I did an interview with Luke from Linus Tech Tips, and he some people don't know this, but yeah, I did an interview with him while I was making the video, and I wanted to include, you know, some sections from interviewing different content creators, and I wanted to show the footage to some content creators and get their take on it and kind of like in-cap the video. So I wasn't done with the video. And so I sent the full video to Luke with his interview saying, hey, here's a bunch of questions I asked you. Is it cool if I use some of this? You know, just kind of getting the thumbs up from him. Well, he had a conversation with Linus, and Linus accidentally leaked the video about a week prior from when I was going to post it.
Ooh.
And I get all these people coming to my Discord messaging me, oh my God, the video's live. Or I mean, they're talking about it. I'm like, well, shit, I better publish it now. And I looked at the current version that I had just had like this long interview with Luke. That's why it has this long interview with Luke. That's kind of out of place, because that's just what was uploaded on YouTube. And if people don't know this, you don't just upload a video to YouTube and it just goes live. It has to go through encoding, and it can take, you know,
copyright,
if you have a smaller
claim,
channel,
has to make sure there's no music in there. That's going
to
get striked.
It can take 6 to 12 hours to process. Now my videos process in like 30 minutes, but at the time, long videos can take a long time to process to get to 4K bitrate, all that kind of stuff. Right.
Right.
So I said, you know what? This isn't exactly what I wanted to post, but it will work. And this is the most effective way. So I hit publish, you know, I published it like on like a Friday night at like 9 or 10 PM, you know, because I needed a lot of people outside of the gaming industry to know about this video. And I wanted it to be a big deal if BSG did take it down.
Right.
Because, you know, they had the right to. It's their intellectual property, the game footage and all that. They have the, you know, with one click, they could take it down. And for
like
that,
they take away all the people who play the single player version of the game that's like heavily modded. They strike all that shit immediately because they don't want you doing that.
Exactly.
So, they could have if they wanted to, but like, that's kind of cool. They didn't. But at the same time, it's like, you know, that video would have circulated either way because people would have downloaded it, guaranteed. People would have been sharing it.
Yeah,
but it wouldn't
have caught
as many eyeballs as it would have staying on a YouTube. So, with all of that happened, and then all the stuff that happened after the fact, from an outside person looking in, because I'm a casual Tarkov player. I go on Twitter when it's a slow day at work or I'm got a day off. Like, I'm not super into that world. And it just looked like, you know, the video dropped, and then there was a lot of people who like made like reaction videos. I think the funniest one being One Pig on the casting couch. And you responded to him, and then the next thing you were streaming together. And then recently you guys are kind of getting into it on Twitter. So my question to you is, like, have all your relationships that have gone negative, is there like a single point, or do you feel like people always harbored said feelings and they just were like using you for clicks?
Yes, and yes, probably. You know, it's one of these things where I I'm a very much a critical person when it comes to like logic and reason, things like that, but I still consider myself an optimist. Like I think the world's going to be a better place in 100 years. You know, that's kind of a quick test if you're an optimist or not, you know, but I really do, there's a lot of things bad in the world, but I consider myself an optimist. Even when I was making this Wiggle video, I was thinking, okay, I can draw attention to this issue. We can get, my idea was there's not enough people who understand, first of all, how bad the cheating is, but that it can be solved, because I didn't want to make the video if it can't be solved.
Right. You want to present a solution to the problem.
So, you know, there were some people that were critical of me, like one pick, for example. And I figured, you know what? Okay, he's critical of me. Why? You know, this is a community, and the community, I think the game would come out better if people are united in this cause. You know, let's hold BSG accountable in a very rational, empathetic way. If you watch the Wiggle video, I never mentioned Nikita or BSG really in the video. I don't call him incompetent. I don't do low blows. It's just, here's this problem. And then I spent a few more videos just rationally going through like how like the Cycle Frontier or other games dealt with this problem and how it can be solved. And
exactly.
I met with some of the most interesting people, a lot of offline talks with anti-cheat devs and stuff where they told me what can be done, what can't be done, what's a reasonable, you know, goal. So for example, like, you know, zero cheaters, not very reasonable, but maybe, you know, not half your raids, you know, is probably too much, you know, so kind of pick reasonable goals, what could be done. And, you know, one of my, like a really big, person who was critical of me was One Peg. And I reached out to him and I said, listen, man, like, so right after the Wiggle dropped, I mean, you know, my live viewership was crazy. I think we had like 30,000 live viewers on a stream. And I invited him to come play with me. I invited him to come play with me.
So you extended the olive branch.
Yeah. And I titled it something like, you know, with One Peg, and I had a friendly discussion, asked him about his family, just like we had a really, I tried to make it as, you know, as kosher as it could be.
Right.
And I also invited him to, you know, I set up a interview with the head of anti-cheat at Riot's Vanguard. And he actually got poached by Amazon. And then he came back to Riot. He actually started the Riot Vanguard thing. And I had some connections with some of the guys that worked there. And so we were able to get that. And so like, you know, that's a really cool interview. He can make content around it. You're talking to actual
subject matter experts in the field. Like, how many industries can you just like have access to, like the top of the top guys? That's amazing.
And here's the thing. When One Peg was really critical and he was about to hit 100,000 subscribers and he was at like 98,000 or something like that, right?
Okay.
And I was watching his subscribers go down. He was losing thousands of subscribers. And so I saw that and I was like, man. And so I knew it's because of his bad take. And so I thought, you know, here we go. I'll send this out here. Maybe we, and my wife is so funny because she's way more tactful than me. And she was like, what are you doing? That guy was, he was saying all these things about you. Like, why would you even be in the same room? I was like, listen, if we want this to, if we want this mission to be successful, I think, you know, getting people united, whatever. And, you know, it turns out I was very naive. I was wrong. Because the second I'm old news or the second I'm not relevant anymore for whatever reason, he just turned it right back on. And it really saddens me because, like, dude, I just don't.
Did he send you a message previous? Because you guys had a little bit of a rapport right there.
No, he hasn't messaged me, I guess almost a year, you know,
to disagree with somebody and be like, hey, let's have a discussion. Like if he was to like DM you personally or even get you on like a debate type platform, because you seem like the kind of guy who would be willing to do a debate type platform other than just, you know, smearing somebody via Twitch or Twitter or whatever.
No. I mean, it's and to me, this is one thing. Anybody trying to get into the streaming gaming world, or especially streaming, you know, it's a clout game. People, you know, people don't want to hang out with you if you have 10 viewers, and if you get 100 viewers the next day, all of a sudden they're messaging you. And what I always encourage people to do is play the long game. You know, those kinds of people that are clout jumping and all that, maybe they'll hit a big boom one year, maybe they won't. But it will catch up to them, and you burn enough bridges. And it will catch up to you. These gaming worlds, they're not that big. And you know, that kind of stuff. And I've never done anybody dirty. I've always been honest and transparent. And it doesn't always get you the most clicks, you know. I probably could have farmed more engagement just going ham on One Peg when I had the power advantage on, when I had all the viewers, and I could have just like just destroyed them.
Yeah, you guys could have had a consensual internet beef. You guys could have been going at it.
And I don't think that was the right thing to do. And so it's lame. And I think the other thing that I think bugs some people like this is, you know, I don't stream Tarkov for a living. I don't do it full time. And he does. And I think, you know, I have the ability to just have that 1,000-foot view and stand back and just, you know, go, you know, this is what I want to do in 10 years.
Right.
And this little beef about this thing is like irrelevant, where to him, it's like it's survival mode. People project their insecurities. So if you ever meet somebody and they tell you how good of a relationship they have with their wife or girlfriend, oh my God, we are doing so well. Look at our Facebook. We have all these, you know, smiley photos and all that kind of stuff. I usually get really like, there's something wrong here. Like, why do you keep telling me about this? You know, or if you tell me you make a bunch of money and you're so set and your investments are so good and you make so much money. And then the next week you tell me about how good you're doing with money and money is not a problem at all. It's like, you have some money problems probably.
So you're telling me Andrew Tate doesn't have the biggest dick in the world?
yeah I mean it's like the oldest trick in the book, and I think that's a little you know, so to me with a lot of these guys that I've run into, you know, you go and you look at what they obsess on and talk about all the time, and usually the opposite is true.
So coming from that medical field that we touched on earlier and dealing with a lot of heavy shit, when you come into this kind of space and you see people taking the stances they do and getting as upset as they do, are you kind of hit with like a reality check of like, wow, this is like so detached from the world that I used to be in?
Yeah. So I had a controversial video that I put up about the Columbine school shooter mom who, yes. It turns out when you look at all of her stuff, she's not a very good person. And what happens is I would love to make a video where I go around and poll people and ask them, when was the last time you put a comment on Twitter? When was the last time you put a comment on YouTube? When was the last time you downvoted a video? Or when was the last time you interacted with social media? And go around to different places in the world, like go to like a school and talk to teachers, you know, and see how often they, you know, interact with social media in that way. Go talk to like lawyers, go talk to business owners, go talk to people who have families and children, or go talk to like grandparents versus, you know, I mean, you have an issue with technology there, but go talk to just a bunch of different people.
Don't talk to the Amish.
My guess is like the Redditor stereotype is vastly, you know, and the social justice warrior on Twitter, or the, you know, the Facebook conspiracy person that we all know, you know, that's on, you know, that's always emailing you, whatever. Those people are vastly overrepresented in social media. And so what was really interesting about The Wiggle is because it hit kind of more mainstream players. So it wasn't just, you know, a lot of my friends, I had a guy that I used to stream with and play a lot with, young kid who I haven't talked to in a while. And he messaged me, and was like, "Hey man, let's play some more." I was like, yeah. And he goes, "What happened to the Discord? Did you shut it?" Because he's a really nice kid. Assumed that maybe he got kicked out, but he didn't like accuse me of anything. He's like, "What happened to this?" "Oh, I mean, I shut it down." He's like, "Oh really? Why?" I was like, "Oh, you know, just got really busy. It was hard to maintain." He's like, "Oh, okay." He didn't even know about the Wiggle video, you know, but he plays Tarkov. Like again, not everybody is plugged into all this like we think they are. And he's my buddy and he didn't even know about this video, you know? And that's so funny. I really think you have to like, I don't want to be impervious to, you know, criticism, and I don't want to not, I don't want to be in an echo chamber, but at the same time, I don't think, you know, listening to a bunch of people complain on Twitter is the best metric for what actual real human beings out in the world who have productive lives are thinking. And
especially when they give such broad statements, like my friend Cisco the other day put out a post responding to Landmark, who just said BSG's asleep at the wheel, and he was just like, "Well, how are they asleep at the wheel? Can you please go over that statement?" And then like a bunch of people, including Donut Operator, jump on his ass. It's just like, if asking for clarifying information is shit talking, then what kind of society is this? What kind, like, how can we have a conversation? Like, it's online is just a weird place, man. It's very strange.
Yeah. No, it really is. It is a different world. We live in a world where criticizing the parents of a school shooter is like off the table.
Yeah. So
I'm like, what world are we living in? And you know, what is interesting is the tides are changing a little bit. We just, there was a parents of a school shooter just recently from I believe it was Oxford, or what's the name of this town?
They were found guilty for that, weren't they?
Yeah. So the mom's going to prison and they're trying the dad. I think they're still sentencing the dad and figuring out there's a little bit of a difference there. And I think we're in a world now where like some of that pushback, I do think some of the craziness with all of the outrage culture and all that is kind of like, I kind of think everyone's getting wise to it all. We're looking at the outrage, like even companies are going, wow, when like 100,000 people on Twitter get all mad about something, we probably shouldn't even do anything because it may not be that big of a deal. Where in the past that would have been seen as like this, you know, oh my God, our business is over.
Right. So my question to you about the Columbine video, was that like a direct jump from like making that video about the RuneScape guy who made comments online about doing a school shooting and then he was found for terrorist acts and he dealt some time in jail? And like the Columbine shooters are mentioned a little bit in that video. Was that like a direct jump from that one to that one? Like, well, I already touched on this and then you came across that TED talk, or what was the transition? Like what inspired you to make a video about something so controversial and so far removed?
Yeah, sure. So what's interesting about that is like the video with the RuneScape felon, Josh, that video, I did so much research and there's so many dead end paths that just never, you know, worked out. I hired like several private investigators to try to track down his ex-girlfriends, their phone numbers, their addresses, to kind of corroborate his story and fact check him to make sure he wasn't, you know, because no one's done that with this guy. And if some of the viewers don't know, Josh Palat, he threatened a school shooting in a video game. And they, you know, just in the text chat of a video game to somebody living in Canada, you know, and they reported him and he spent time in prison. And, you know, the whole thing is wild, you know. It's super interesting story. You should go check that video out. But long story short, I was doing a bunch of research about everything going on at that time, to 2012, with school shootings and everything happening, and how the government was responding to things, and how the social media, you know, police and stuff were kind of tracking people down and preventing things and seeing if was this normal, was this not normal at the time. And so, you know, when you watch like a million videos about school shooters and news and stuff, of course you get recommended this stuff. And we had a newborn at the time, and you know, we're stuck on the couch, sleep deprived, you know, watching just long form interviews and things like that. And I watched the video with Sue Klebold, the TED Talk, where she's and I just couldn't believe but before the video started, I said, oh my gosh, like first of all, what is she going to teach us? But second of all, like she better like take some accountability for what happened. And I'm sitting there with my wife, you know, and we're watching this and we just couldn't believe it. And of course she does all the things like, you know, that you would do. Like she did allude to like, oh, you know, I wasn't the best. She kind of said a few offhand remarks that were kind of, I'm not the best mom or whatever, but her overall message was, this could happen to you. And there's nothing that I could have done. And you know, the next school shooter could be your son or daughter. And it's like, no, I just don't believe that. And, I couldn't believe that she had written books and gone on speaking tours. And basically, you know, parroted that same message over and over and over. And so to me, it hit me so hard. And I was like, someone has to have made a video about this. So I went online. No one's even talked about it. I went and did a search on like articles that were coming out around the time when she did her big broadcast, interviews for mainstream television. And there were some journalists pushing back, and especially in Colorado where the, you know, the Columbine shooting happened. Yep. There were a bunch of journalists who had pushed back a little bit here and there, but really it was like a video that no one wanted to make because, I mean, we're all thinking it, but no one wants to make the video because it's like you're going after a mom, and that's like against the rules. You know, you don't, right. Moms can't make mistakes. You know, dads can, but moms can't. And there's just that kind of like sentiment. And so I don't think I went crazy hard on her, but I did point out all the things that she had done, you know, crazy stuff. And right. I just wanted to make the video. I don't know how else to say it. I put it on a second channel that, you know, cause it had nothing to do with gaming and I had to put it somewhere. But what's so funny, how people have all these conspiracy theories, like I was trying to hide or like something, even though my channels are connected. And it's like, no, guys, it's just not a gaming related video. It just doesn't belong on my main channel.
Don't you have the link to the second channel in the description of the first channel? Like, yeah, you're not hiding it at all.
Yeah, yeah, of course. And I don't hide my face or my voice or anything like that. And it's one of those things. I even announced it on my main game. Hey, I have another channel over here. Right. Like if you go back and look at YouTube, I have like a community post saying, hey, I have another channel if you're into this kind of stuff. But like, you know, gamers, it is a different audience, you know, so yes. I didn't expect anybody to have a lot of crossover there.
The way I came across that video is Air Wing Marine used it to detract you on Twitter for something that you said, saying like, well, this is your take, so I can't believe, like, you know, taking two very unrelated things. That's how I first saw the video. And it was a damning video. I mean, have you seen some of the retractions people have made on the Columbine video? And how do you deal with such, like, because I know you made that video and you put a lot of effort and a lot of research. I don't know if you hired investigators like you did for the previous one we talked about. But like, yeah, what was that experience like?
Yeah. So, you know, there's a lesson to be learned here. When, you know, people, there are hundreds, if not thousands of videos of people responding to my Wiggle video. So anytime you get more than 1 million views, you get 3 million views, whatever, on a video, you're going to have a bunch of people responding to it, not liking it. And you can't respond to everyone. I mean, you just literally can't. And you certainly can't respond to nameless, faceless Twitter people, you know? There's just no time. And it's also like, if I respond to everybody, I send views their way, or I legitimize their position, right? And so it's one of these things where if you are making content in the realm of, say, like politics or philosophy, or you're talking about something that's kind of a matter of like kind of values. So, you know, if there are two types of people. There are people who believe that you know, parenting, you know, is something that you should be responsible for, and there are people who don't think that you should be responsible for your parenting. And depending on what camp you fall in, you're gonna see my video in a very different light. And so, yeah, this guy made a video in response to my Stu Klebold video, and, you know, he obviously disagreed with me. And rather than disagreeing with me and showing me how it was wrong, he took the stance that I am lying and like manipulating and making up facts or whatever.
Did this person contact you at all to like have a discussion?
No,
this
person? No. And I think that's really telling. I think contacting somebody ahead of time. So whenever I do journalism, I contact people ahead of time and I say, hey, here are some accusations. I would love to have you clarify or respond or whatever. And I think that is like one of the capstone things for journalistic integrity. And what's kind of ironic is when I was running, I was going to make a follow-up video to the Tarkov cheating situation months ago.
Yeah.
And I saw the
video link was that response chain.
Yeah. So I had contacted Hayes, who, you know, he was calling me out in a stream and just, you know, saying a bunch of things. And I wanted to get his honest, you know, take on things. And I asked him a bunch of questions, like, how bad do you think the cheating is? Like, whatever. I just a bunch of like questions. And that was used against me as like me being unethical or something or whatever. And I was like, no, like, I'm going to make a video. I'm going to mention you. And I think it's honorable to tell you ahead of time and ask you, you know, here are some accusations, here are some things you said. Do you still believe them? Do you stand by them? What do you think is going on? And that was, you know, of course, Erwin Meering didn't like that, which I find ironic. Erwin Meering also he deleted a lot of these posts, but he would he posted a bunch of information, conspiracy theories, like he said somebody reached out to him and said I had hired paid actors for the Wiggle video, and I'm like, okay, dude, like you can't publish crazy information like that without any evidence whatsoever. And he kept like interacting with these people claiming one theory was that I followed this guy around and stream sniped him for like a long time or something. And I'm like, dude, I don't even play that many games. Like, I don't even know how I would even follow somebody around. So all these conspiracy theories, of course,
he didn't post any audio files or anything of these conversations.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly. They're just some random faceless guy on Twitter with 20 followers said it. So he reposted it. And the thing is that's like literally the opposite of journalistic integrity. Not only are you not verifying the sources, but you're publishing the results that make me look bad without fact checking. And then when you delete it, you didn't actually update everybody and say, hey, this turns out to be a dead end and I shouldn't have posted this. He didn't do that, right? So with the Sue Klebold video, there was one kind of mistake that I don't even think was that big of a mistake. I quoted her book rather than her in the book. So she writes a book and there's a quote that I pulled from the book and I said it was her quote, but it was from her book. And it was from, you know, she had somebody write the foreword and she had a psychologist write the foreword that she picked, that of course she approved, who summarized her book. And at one point he summarized the book and basically said, you know, if there's one overall takeaway from this book, it's that, you know, your child, you know, the next school shooter could be your own child, you know, basically. And she parrots this idea like several times throughout the book. She parrots it in speeches. She parrots it in the TED Talk. She parrots it in there's an interview where she had with like a, you know, a mainstream network where, you know, her and her husband at the time, she got divorced later, but her and her husband at the time basically said like, there's no, like, you know, the next school shooter could be your son or daughter. Like, you know, like to anybody, you know, which is essentially the position that it's not my fault. Right. You know? And so a lot of people looked at that and said, well, you know, like you misquoted that, like you did that intentionally and you're, you know, everything must be thrown out.
So they tried to make your entire video invalidated based off one mistake. And then have you made a video or put out something that addresses that mistake? Be like, oh, this is
In the description, I did an update. I pinned a comment with an update saying, hey, I made this mistake. I made a community post. I made a Twitter post. I did, you know, as much as I can. I don't think the mistake was so big that I need to take the video down. I think if I had said that quote came from her or her book and it doesn't exist and she's never said those words, I would feel bad. That's not cool. But you know, these kinds of mistakes, you know, in an hour video or whatever, these little tiny mistakes are not excusable. I don't love that I made that little mistake because it allows people to criticize your position, you know, in a way that just shouldn't be there. You should take that off the table. Everything should be exactly perfect when you make videos. I would prefer it to be that way. You know,
would
and
you
then
say other, that's your biggest regret with that process, with that video? Was that mistake?
My biggest regret with that video is I shouldn't. So I had responded. I had tried to reach out to this guy and do a live stream and talk to him because I really do believe that if we had a conversation, like if I had a conversation with him in a bar or something with no audience, I think, you know, he would realize that I'm a genuine guy and this isn't some evil smear campaign. But you know, the problem is there's an audience and there's clout and this guy doesn't get very many views, you know,
a lot of variables.
This response video, this outrage video is the most views he's ever gotten on anything. And because it's YouTube drama, you know? And so it's one of these things where you want to give people the benefit of the doubt, and I apparently am a sucker for this. So I did it again, and I had a live stream with him where I tried to have a conversation with him, and it just all he wanted me to say was I'm a liar and I made everything up, and if I didn't say anything other than that, he was just going to yell over me and talk over me, and it was the
conversation. That's not a debate. Yeah, it was
bad, and so then of course that just fuels the narrative even more, and it fuels his views, and you know, it was a big cluster. And you know, the lesson to be learned is you know, if people have, you know, if someone legitimate who has actual I think if someone criticizes you and they have something to lose, I think, right. and it is significant, and it is a good criticism. I think you should respond. But if someone criticizes you and they have nothing to lose and only to gain from publicity around it, I think you're stepping into tricky water, and you know, maybe consider ignoring it. And I should have just ignored it. I should have ignored one peg, you know. I should have, you know, and so I make these mistakes over and over, and it's just the way it goes. And it's hard because when you make a video and you put a lot of time into something, it's like writing a book. It's like your baby, you know? Right. And when someone makes fun of your baby, you're like, no. So, yeah.
So would you say being a parent yourself contributed a lot to the feelings, the visceral reaction you had to hearing her stance repeated over and over?
Yeah, I think what's really, really funny is people in the comments say, well, if you were a parent, you would understand and all this kind of stuff. And yeah, I mean, I've now been a parent for almost 12 years now. And I have less patience and I have less empathy for really, really bad parents. And I don't mean like parents who make mistakes, people who get divorced, people who make mistakes, whatever. Everyone's going to make mistakes.
Yeah, nobody's perfect.
When you see some of the things that really bad, evil parents do, it's
especially
just
unforgivable. As a firefighter that you have seen, like, I'm not even going to go into detail, but people can read between the lines. Yeah, that's hard not to.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when there is domestic abuse, when there's anything related to children, we always would get called. And you know, you see all that, and you have a catalog in your head of the type of people that you run into. And you know, I think the harder thing for people to point out, you know, when things are really complicated and there's a long timeline and there's multiple, you know, and there's journals and there's all this stuff. I mean, the amount of hours I had to go through to, you know, I read all of the Columbine journals. I read all of the police paperwork. I read all of the psych evals from the counselors who were meeting with Dylan and Eric, because you know, they got caught for you know, hacking into the computers, and they got caught breaking entry, and they were felons and all this kind of stuff. And so all that paperwork is out there. It's a really boring to go through. It's written in fucking cursive, you know,
and being a journalist.
And I had to go bring it over to like several people, like teachers, you know, who like know how to read bad handwriting. And I'm like, can you like, Claire, I think this is what it's saying here. And I, you know, the amount of work that went into this is extraordinary, you know? And the thing that's frustrating is that if you make a response video and you just point out a couple little mistakes here and there, and then the rest are just kind of like, probably debatable whether it's just a matter of opinion, and you frame it with this is about dishonesty or this is about, you know, like an ethics situation or something like that.
Right.
To someone watching that who just wants to farm, who wants to get riled up about something and get outraged and whatever, they're not going to go and fact check everything. They're not going to go and if they haven't seen my video in 6 months, it's a long video. There's a lot of information. It's really easy to just look at that and it seems really, really, really compelling. And so I battled back and forth of whether to respond or not. And I've just decided not to. What's funny is I talk to people, I'll run into random people. Like you know, for this documentary I'm making, it's unrelated to anything I've done, you know, but it is about population demographics and antinatalism and a bunch of other stuff.
Okay.
I reach out to people for interviews and they go, oh yeah, I've seen that video. And I'm like, what did you think? Or have you, and he goes, and a lot of times they'll go, oh yeah, there's that crazy guy who had that dumb video, whatever. And like, they like don't even think anything of it.
They actually say that shit.
Yeah. And what's interesting is like, that sentiment doesn't get across when you look at how the internet works, because it's not outrage. How many times do you see, you know, responses on Twitter or YouTube comments, which is like, hey man, you're doing such a great job, keep going. You almost never see that. Yeah. So it's one of those things where, there's not really, I guess to me is when it comes to this sort of stuff, I kind of don't want those viewers as my viewers. You know, fair. I don't want to farm people who want that kind of outrage and want to, you know, start YouTube drama and things like that. I've tried to not do that, and I'm not perfect by any means, but, right. You know, I do want an audience who wants to hold parents accountable. And if we, you know, and if there's a bunch of people out there that think that there's no way to prevent school shooters, I'm like, man, you're not my people.
Fair. No, that's a very fair take on that. And then it's just like, yeah, you're only human. So you're going to get frustrated when people say negative things about you on the regular, like. And, you know, sometimes we let our worst selves take over and we say some shit back to people on these online spaces. That's just unfortunately how it is. And it's not one of those things where I hate it when somebody's like, well, this guy called this guy this, so I don't like him or his opinion. It was just like, yeah, but there's probably a lot more to it. Like, people like to take things at like what they see and not really dig too much deeper. So somebody could see a video and not even watch it and be like, oh, well, this guy made up a bunch of shit and not even know what they're talking about. So yeah, I can totally see how that could get frustrating and easy to get into the mud of all of that. So my question to you, Go, is somebody who's trying to operate with journalistic integrity, trying to contact sources, trying to verify sources, that kind of stuff, how difficult is it to operate in a content creation world where people don't always adhere to those things, where people don't always, like, you know, follow said ideals and principles?
Yeah, you know, I try to operate in my own bubble, I guess you could say. Like, you know, I can do the right thing. You know, I had reached out to CoffeeZilla about this. And nice. He gave me a lot of really, really good pointers. And he actually watched one of my investigative videos and said it was, you did a really, really, really good job. And one of the things that he told me was, you did the right thing contacting the guy. So I did an investigation video about a guy who had like a gaming software scam and whatnot. And, you know, it caused a lot of problems contacting him ahead of time of the video, because he sued me the day the video went out without even watching. Like literally within 10 minutes of it going out, I got an email, you know, like, there's no way, you didn't even watch the video. It's like, it's a 45 minute video and you sued me 10 minutes. Like, how do you, you know, so it's one of these things where now there's some strategy things that I learned that I can improve on. You know, the bottom line is reaching out to people and asking them for, you know, for them to respond to things before you run a story is difficult, and it kind of sucks and it slows things down, and they can, you know, it may delay your video a week. It may cause you to do more editing. You may have to change your story. You may have to like widen your kind of perspective a little bit. And it is hard, but what I'll say is that people see that. There's a reason CoffeeZilla is number one in this space on YouTube. It's right. Because he does things the right way. And there's a reason there is a reason why in a few videos I got more subscribers than OnePeg did in the last 5 years, is because doing things properly and giving people what they want and being, you know, smart about how you make content is like, people see it. People are smart. I truly believe that people are smart. I think there's a vocal minority of people who are out, you know, who have outrage, but I really do believe, you know, the lack of effort that a lot of people put into content, is an opportunity for me or someone else to step in and succeed. And I think a lot of the videos I've made have proven that, and I'm going to continue to do that. I'm going to continue to do the right thing. It is a long game. It's not a short game where I'm looking for an easy view. I'm not bothered by it. I don't like, you know, I think it's something you have to kind of get over. If you're going to be in content creation, you need to get some thick skin, because you're going to hear every opinion imaginable. I don't think it's the biggest deal. I do wish, you know, more people would do it, but
totally. So who would you say out of all of the journalistic, whether people, whether it be, you know, out there on like news platforms or people in the content creating space, do you have a certain one that you look up to, any journalists that you want to emulate in your approach and style?
That's a tough one. You know, I try not to idolize people. I try not to make people, I don't want to say a god, but I try not to idolize people too much, because you're setting yourself up for a lot of disappointment.
Never meet your heroes, kids.
Yeah. You know, I even have trouble saying something like this, because you can instantly become dated 10 years from now when you find out, you know, they're out on Epstein's Island or, you know, whatever. Right. But, you know, as far as the YouTube media space, like I've already mentioned, the CoffeeZilla stuff, right. I don't really, you know, I'm not, this is kind of funny. I don't consume as much mainstream news, as I used to. And I've been kind of jaded, with a lot of the, you know, the stuff coming out. And I really like, I like Reason TV. I like a lot of their stuff, although they haven't been doing as much journalism as they used to. They had a great piece on healthcare, where they went and did this whole piece about this surgery center in Oklahoma that doesn't accept insurance, but costs less than if you had insurance. And like employers were like sending their patients over there and doing knee surgeries and things like that. And what I loved about a piece like that is it changed my mind about something in healthcare. And it was a great, like, you know, spotlight on something that no one else was willing to cover. And it actually showed how broken our insurance system is and how, you know, it's just inexcusable, you know?
It's terrible. You're getting shot or one major accident away from going bankrupt.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So I hesitate to give like one example of someone, and, you know, that's not political and not, you know, going to get me in trouble. but yeah, I think to me, I'm kind of shifting more towards, more longer form, like documentary style, investigative, videos. And that's kind of, I think, the route that I want to go. The, you know, journalism, you know, to really do it properly, I've realized, like, to actually make money doing it, over a long period of time, and to not be incentivized by money and whatever is going to get the most views or whatever, is you need to have, you really need to have, coworkers. You need to have, you know, people in your space who are somewhat auditing you and, you know, validating things. You know, there's a huge advantage of working
in an echo chamber is so like deafening, you know?
So one thing, you know, I can't tell you how many stories I've started and stopped. I've started so many stories, you know, allegations of, teen trafficking in Utah, tech stuff, startups, all kinds of stuff that I've had insiders and people have come to me, but they're not willing to give their name, for example. And like, I don't feel comfortable running an accusation without somebody, you know, saying, hey, without an accuser. And if I worked for like the New York Times or I worked for a Wall Street Journal or something, I could have other journalists look at this and verify my source. And, you know, and I could actually at least say it was an anonymous source that was verified. Me saying that doesn't mean a lot, you know?
Right.
And so what I've realized over time is like, there is a benefit to having people around you to help you, break a story, and there's also like a legal side of all this, you know, where no matter how right you are, you know, you still can get sued for anything, and even if you're right, it can cost you $100,000 defending yourself. And it's just I what I've learned is it's so difficult to talk about things that matter in the world if you're effective. If you're not effective, no one cares. But when you're effective, it's really difficult to talk about things in the world that matter. And so, I'm learning some of those lessons. And I think it's kind of changed my mind about the whole industry as well.
Okay. So we're getting close to our time constraints. We only have a few questions left, and then I'll let you get back to your weekend, goat. So one of my last questions is, from when you started making content to where you're at now, what would you say has been the biggest change in delivery or, you know, like self voice or, you know, that kind of stuff? Like, what would you say has changed the most?
I would say when I initially started doing content, I tried to make video or videos consistently to maintain like a schedule or maintain some kind of like, I had this existential threat of like, I need to be relevant. I need to keep making video. I need to show up. I need to do this. I need to do X and Y. And over time I have completely shifted over to project-based thinking. So I'm not thinking about this week or this month or I need to make a video. I'm thinking about what needs to be made. Right. And so I have shifted my entire idea around like if I have to create a new channel to make a video, I'll do that because the idea in the project is that important. If I have to, like I have a history video floating around that I may make a new channel for. And I think it's worth it. The Sue Klebold video is an example of that. Like I no longer think about the week schedule or hitting some kind of deadline. I don't think about views per se. I think more about effectiveness. I think about being useful in the world. And I think more content creators, if they could think that way, shift their mindset around providing value and thinking about everyone in the world rather than you know, themselves, like take themselves out of the narrative. Anyone could have made any of my videos if they just said the words and done it. I mean, obviously if they've done it good, you know, but it's not necessarily me, it's the ideas. And I think I've completely shifted to that kind of way of thinking. And I think it's a really healthy way of having longevity in this industry.
Nice. So if you could give any piece of advice for somebody who is coming up in this scene, whether it be for content creation, journalistic videos, any type of thing in that realm, what would be your best piece of advice?
I think they need to ask themselves, why you? Why you? Why are you doing this? And if you don't have a really good answer for that, you need to go figure that out. You need to go get, and my answer to most of these people, because they tend to be more on the young side, is like, you need to go have more experiences. You need to work different jobs, have unique experiences. You know, I watched a video with this guy who's a PA, a physician's assistant, and he's on the South Pole. And so they wow. I didn't know this, that when you go to the South Pole, it's more remote than like the International Space Station because like
is he part of a military thing or is he like a civilian?
It is a research, silo building or whatever. And you know, for 6 months out of the year, you can't leave. Like if you were to have a heart attack, you're just stuck there. There's no way that because there's no planes and you can't get a boat there because everything's frozen. So what's really interesting about that is like, you could go and like, you know, whatever job you have, you could go work on a cruise ship. You could go work in another country. You could go do something interesting. Go do something challenging. Like I think most people who want to go into content creation and are struggling, they don't have a voice. There's no reason for them to exist. And they're looking at everybody else and trying to, they're looking at all the views and the money and all that kind of stuff.
Exist in this space, which is clear. Exist in this space.
Yeah. Yeah.
Non-exist period.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. See, I need a PR person. I need somebody to follow me around and be like, listen, people are going to interpret that the wrong way.
Probably taking bong hits this whole time. I'd be a terrible PR person.
Yeah, yeah. So I think people need to look at you know, everyone in the, you know, the internet space and not see all the good things that are coming and want to emulate that, but think about why me? Like, why would anybody want to listen to me? And what is my like mission here? Like, am I really like one in a billion when it comes to entertaining people? Well, if you are, then yeah, you probably should live stream 12 to 14 hours a day. But there are so few people like that. And I think I think that's my biggest, because for a while I had a content creator video series where I went through people's content and rated it and gave people advice and whatnot. And the vast, I made a Reddit post to say, hey, put your, you know, channel in here and we'll go through it. Right. And I would say 9 out of 10 just didn't have a reason to be making content. And it was almost like an AI generated YouTube video where it was like, yeah, you said the words, it's edited, but like, there's just nothing here. And so I would say that's the biggest thing. And there's not really an easy answer to this. You just need to go and have opinions about things, discover things, have experiences, change jobs, get some relationships, have some friendships, lose friendships. You just need to live life a little bit more.
Right. And don't be afraid of controversy. So last question for you, Goat. What would be your best advice for somebody to get comfortable in uncomfortable situations? Like when they want to speak their voice, they want to do something, but they're afraid of what's going to come their way and how to handle it when it does initially, because it will eventually. It's going to come.
Yeah. So what you're describing is, you know, kind of a form of anxiety, which anxiety in its essence is worrying about something that hasn't happened yet. So most people, when they get into a social situation or they're talking to somebody or they're going to make a video or they're talking about something, they're worried about consequences. You know, what if I say this, they're going to think this. And what if they're going to say this, they're going to think that. And, you know, my biggest recommendation is, like, if you're not yourself, and you go through life and you try to be what you think everyone else wants you to be, you're going to have a very shallow life and you're going to have really shallow friendships and shallow relationships. And, you know, the people that I'm closest to, and this goes for content creation and personal relationships and coworkers and business relationships, the people that I am the closest with are the ones that truly know who I am the most. And so when you are interacting with somebody and you're hiding a version of yourself, you're pretending you're someone that you're not, the person you're interacting with does not know you. They know what you are communicating to them. And the other little trick here is that people aren't dumb. They pick up on this. They see when you're being fake. They see when you're taking the neutral stance on every single thing. And so my biggest recommendation is, one way to get better at this is to ask questions. So, and you can do what, you know, the Socratic method, like say you're at a dinner party and someone says something like really outrageous or kind of out there that you've never heard of that you kind of disagree right. with, maybe just ask questions like, how did you come to this conclusion? What did you, whatever, that's so interesting. I've never thought of that. You can just keep asking questions and they know that you don't agree with them, but you're also exploring it, being honest and transparent and being authentic. You know, that's a great way. Just asking questions is a great way to get used to having these conversations. The other thing too is, like, you don't want to be the confrontational guy who everywhere you go creates battles with everybody and tries to tell everybody they're wrong. And that's kind of the opposite, you know. And I imagine if someone is struggling with confrontation, they're not that kind of person. I'm more of that kind of person. I have to taper things back typically. So, you know, I hope that's helpful.
Oh, absolutely. So now is your time, Goat, to say whatever it is you would like to say, whether it is to thank your viewers, thank your moderators, talk about video coming up, message for your detractors. Now's your time to say whatever it is you would like to say, Goat. The floor is yours.
Yeah, well, thanks for listening. And yeah, I'm going to be shooting a documentary. It's untitled. I don't know when it's going to come back. We're still filming all the way probably through the summer. And who knows where that's going to post. I don't really have anything to really sell or promote right now. You know, if you've watched any of my stuff, I thank you so much. I do actually read every comment, if you can believe it. So you can always, leave a comment somewhere and write whatever you want to write. And I really appreciate everyone's feedback.
Totally. I would like to take this time to thank you for taking the time out of your Easter weekend to come on here and to talk to a complete stranger about, you know, all things content related. And then we're going to put the links for all the Goat stuff in the description. So if you want to check out his YouTube, things like that, just feel free to scroll down, click the link, and give the man a follow. Other than that, this has been Castle Comms, episode 113. And why don't you go outside and touch and/or smoke some grass? And we'll catch you next time on the comms.